So I will start. It will be a little bit of time before you need the source sheet, so we should be okay. So I want to start first with talking about why I chose this topic. And if you know anything about me, and if my students were to tell you anything about me, they could tell you that I love a good pun. And so when I thought about different shiurim, I thought about like spoofs on song titles I could use. And I was like, you know what, I could give a shiur about magic, and I could call it Do We Believe in Magic instead of Do You Believe in Magic. I have this other shiur that I want to give on Slav called Why Do Birds Suddenly Appear? I don't have anything to say about that, but I just feel like, oh, it's such a good title. So I figured I'd go with the pun. And then as I started to do my research, I realized, and this is really a disclaimer for the shiur, there is so much that I could say about magic in Tanakh, and so this shiur is just going to really touch on the surface of the topic. There's just not enough time to go into all the many different avenues and diversions that we could take, so I hope I picked a good selection of things to talk about, but we're definitely, that is my caveat, we're definitely not going to cover everything. So magic actually shows up all over Tanakh. There are nearly 60 times in Tanakh that magic is referenced, mostly to say, don't engage in these behaviors, right? I mean, even when it's referenced otherwise, it's people who are using magic, and clearly that's not okay, right? So there's 60 times that it's mentioned. And I've given you, so if you had your source sheets, you could look at source number one. It says, Al tifnu al ha'avot, al hayid onim, al tivakshu letama behem, ani Hashem elokeichem. So from this upcoming parsha, Kedoshim, in the list of many things that you should not do in order to be considered holy, it says, do not turn to ghosts, and do not inquire of familiar spirits to be defiled by them. I, the Lord, am your God. So it's constantly this reference in Kedoshim of you have a connection with God, you want to be holy like God, and in the list of things that you cannot do, you shouldn't engage in magic behaviors. And it says here, not that you shouldn't engage in them, but al tifnu. You shouldn't turn to them. You shouldn't seek out these people. So there's no prohibition here against you actually practicing magic, but you seeking out magicians. And then in Devarim, this is a much lengthier source, it says, Lo yimatzeh becha, ma'avir beno bito ba'esh. So it starts with this this idea that you shouldn't sacrifice your children to Molech, which was a common practice. And what else does it say? Kosim kesamim me'onin u'menachish mechashif v'chover chaver v'sho'el ov v'yidoni v'doresh al hameitim. It lists 8 different practices in magic. It says you should not be found amongst any that makes his son pass through the fire, one that uses divination, a soothsayer or an enchanter, a sorcerer, a charmer, or one who consults a ghost or familiar spirit, a necromancer. So again, it actually, this time, it talks about amongst all of you, you shouldn't find someone who does this. So now it's a prohibition not to seek out magicians, but for you yourself to practice magicians. And there's, practice magic, rather. And there's 8 different kinds of magic that are listed, right? And it's hard to kind of pick up on what are the nuances of each of these, but it says you shouldn't engage with them, and it ends with ki to'avat Hashem. This is an abomination. This is something that's terrible. You definitely should not do this. And the question comes out of these sources is, why not? Is this real? Is this, if you were to actually go and attempt to do any of these things, would something actually come out of it, and is that why it's an abomination? Or is this just part of the many lists of things that you should not do? Is it like equivalent to when they say you shouldn't mourn like the people of other nations, where you cut yourself or you shave your head? It's just like these are behaviors you shouldn't engage in. You know, kind of like the exact opposite of when in Rome, do as the Romans do. Like, when in Rome, in fact, do not do as the Romans do. Do not do the behaviors of those around you. Or is there something actually real? Is there some truth to this? And this becomes a huge machloket between, a very famous machloket between the Rambam and the Ramban. So let's start with the Rambam. The Rambam in Hilchot Avodah Zarah dedicates an entire perek to this discussion. So a little bit of background, this is my own personal story about Rambam, Hilchot Avodah Zarah. My first year at SAR High School, they did not say in the bio that I'm a teacher there, but my first year there I was a fellow. And we decided as a group of fellows that it would be really nice for us to do some sort of siyum where we learned something together. And so we settled on Sefer Mada in the Rambam's Mishnah Torah. And we said, okay, we'll divide up Sefer Mada. And I was thinking about different sections that I could talk about. And I was like, thinking in my head, I was like, I've learned Hilchot Teshuvah so, so many times. I just don't want to take that on again. You know what? I'll learn Avodah Zarah. But instead of saying that, what I chose to say quite loudly in the Beit Midrash is, I don't want to do Teshuvah, I want to do Avodah Zarah. not the best soundbite for a Tanakh teacher to be caught saying, but nevertheless, I learned Hilchot Avodah Zarah, and so I learned this chapter, and I got to revisit it again for this year. So what does he say? The Rambam first goes through those eight categories of magic that I told you about, that we listed in Devarim, and he says, what is each one about? So, for example, let's talk about one who goes to Ha'ovot, the Baalei Ov. What does that mean? So this is actually something that's referenced in Rashi, it's referenced in the Midrash, but it's these people that would take, they would do some sort of magical process so that their armpits would actually like be able to commune with the dead, and the dead would speak from their armpits. Sounds ridiculous, but that's what the Baalei Ov did. And the Yidonim, it's very similar, they also interact with the dead, but their process is a little different. They would take a bone, they would stick it in their mouth, and through the bone, again, the dead would be able to communicate. So he like very clearly first says, okay, these are all the terms. I know exactly what each of these terms are dealing with. I can see what a kosem does. I can tell you what a menachesh does. And all this builds up, right? And you're like, okay, all right, I feel like we're going in one direction. I feel like I see where the conclusion is. But then he ends with, udivarim ha'ila kulan divrei sheker. All of these above matters that I have just spent a long time talking about, all false. They're totally not real. There's no truth to them, he continues. He says, these are all falsehoods and lies with which the original idolaters deceived the Gentile nations in order to lead them after them. It is not fitting for the Jews who are wise sages to be drawn into such emptiness. And he says, he jumped down to the bottom, the master of wisdom and those who perfect knowledge know with clear proof that all these crafts with which the Torah forbade are not reflections of wisdom, but rather emptiness and vanity which attracted the feeble-minded and caused them to abandon all paths of the Torah. He could not be more clear, right? These things, everything that I've listed, even though I can tell you the different practices that each practitioner has, none of them are real. They're all false, and not just that, but they were created not on the assumption that they were real, but on the assumption that they were totally false, and this was an attempt to fool people. So that's the Rambam's approach. The Ramban, on the other hand, I think is probably one of the longest Rambans I've ever seen in Devarim, completely contradicts the Rambam. He does not agree at all. And so I'm just going to start kind of by like walking through the steps of the Ramban. First, he says these things are entirely real. He similarly to the Rambam delineates, okay, this is what this practice is, this is what this practice is. He mostly agrees with the Rambam in terms of what do soothsayers do versus those who use divinations, all of that. And then he goes on to say that there's this famous Chazal that says that the non-Jewish nations were very upset because they said, you know, the Jews have Nevi'im. They have people who are able to communicate with God. And so, of course, they're going to be better than us because they have a means of talking to God. We don't have that. And so as an attempt almost to appease them or to make it, you know, one-to-one fair, God said, you know what? I'll give you magic. And if that's the case, and it truly becomes the counterpart to Nevuah, then it has to be real. What kind of consolation would that be if you said, okay, you know, the Jews have Nevi'im, but I'll give you this fake thing that's not real, you know, that's not real at all, that has absolutely no benefit, right? So he says, of course it's real. It's also interesting, right, and I think this speaks to a lot of their personalities. The Rambam, right, he's the rationalist. Of course he doesn't think magic is real. That goes against what he would say. What about the Ramban? What do we know about the Ramban that would make it seem like, of course, he's more bought into, like, magical powers? Or does anyone feel like they know what I'm referring to? What's the Ramban also, besides for his lengthy commentary on the Torah, he was also known to be a Kabbalist, right? And so he even says in this very long Ramban, like, yeah, there's probably in this what he calls a divrei sod. The sod is like secret, that's his buzzword for Kabbalah. He says, you know, there's a relationship. Now, again, when I say that there's many different theorem I could talk about the relationship between Kabbalah and magic at length. I'm not going to, but he certainly makes a connection between the two. And he goes on to say, and this is the part that I bolded. Are we still waiting on the source sheets? Okay, all right, that's fine. We're soon going to get to the part where I'm going to ask you to share your insights. You're just going to have to listen very carefully so you can respond. He says, "Sheyakim bekirbacha navi v'yatin devarav b'piv v'tatim sha'mimanu Ma'yivol v'al v'lo titzarich ata ba'atidot el kosem minachesi kablu otam min hakochavim o min hashifelim b'sharei mala. He says, the hope in the future is that, and this is speaking to the non-Jews, that you are not going to need to listen to the words of the kosem or the minachesh, these like people who do divination, these people who are soothsayers, you can actually turn to the Navi. Now again, if he says that there's going to be some sort of shift in the future, that must imply that at some point that there was truth, there was a reason to turn to those people. So again, there was something real in what they were doing. Now, what does that mean about magic today? Which again is something I feel like I could talk about for a long time. If the Ramban says that magic was real then, is magic real now? I think there's room for a compromise. So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says, again, if magic is kind of this counterpoint to nebuah, right? If it's like, if it's a balance for, if you have a certain amount of kedusha in the world and magic represents the other side of it, then why could we maybe argue that magic doesn't exist today? Yeah. Sure. So let me finish that point, then I'll get to your question. So why would we argue that magic maybe doesn't exist today? Because we don't have nebuah today. Right? Is that going to be what you're going to say? Yeah, so if it's a one-to-one and we don't have the other one, right, it makes sense to say, of course, we don't have the other side of it. Yes, question.
I'm trying to understand what is real that make it prohibitive. Like, again, is it just from that avoidance, or according to Ramban, where magic is the sort of stone that we have divinely endowed to the other nations there, why shouldn't a Jew be allowed to access it? Is it like that is other gods?
Right. So that was, yeah, thank you. That was a very good question. She was asking, what's really the difference? If magic is in fact real, does that in fact relate to why it is forbidden, or is it just forbidden because it is chukat hagoyim? It is something that non-Jewish people engage in, and that's what makes it problematic. I think that question of, you know, does the realness of the magic relate to the prohibitive nature of it is something that we're going to come to at the end of this year for sure. But, you know, I think to speak to your other point, which is that if you're using power, are you tapping into something else that's outside of God, which obviously doesn't sit right with any of us. I think, you know, thinking about magic in the same realm as Kabbalah, which is what the Ramban does, is really helpful. Because clearly, like the same way Kabbalah is something that God sanctions, it's sort of the system in place, that's probably what magic is. And that also like goes back to what Ramban is saying, where if God attempted to create magic as a counterpart to Nebuah, right, again, it's something brought on by God. So I think it's definitely not manipulating around God without his sanction. Yes, another question. Absolutely, yes. Certainly. Absolutely, and there will be sufficient time for questions at the end, I promise. So, okay, so just to recap, so we can keep with the flow. We looked at two medieval perspectives on magic, right? The Rambam, who says there's absolutely no truth to this. It was created as a falsehood, and it is in fact totally false, and there's no power coming out of magic. And the Ramban, who says, no, of course there is. No, that's still forbidden, but of course it's completely real. So we're going to do what I like to do in my class, which is when we encounter something that's a little bit unclear, we use what I like to call a sample case, right? Let's actually see this play out in somewhere else in Tanakh. So I'll give you an example. We learned in my class about whether or not one should appoint a king. In Sefer Devarim, it talks about like when you get to the land and you approach and you say you want a king, you have to appoint a king. And it's really unclear whether or not you need to do that. And we say, you know what, we're going to look at another place in Tanakh and see what happens when they actually choose to appoint a king. Is that positive? Is that negative? How does that inform the story? So together, we're still waiting on those source sheets, right? We are going to look at a case together and see, based on this case, does it seem like magic is real? So I'm going to start with, I think, like my favorite story in Tanakh, certainly one of my favorite stories in Tanakh, and that is the story of Shaul going to the Baalat Ov. Yes. Which I'm sure a lot of you anticipated when you heard my story was about magic. You're like, I have a feeling that one's going to show up, and you were in fact right. So let's start by reading the story. Again, I'm going to read it. I'm going to ask you guys to be very actively listening since you are without source sheets. So The first pasukim of the parak, it says parak chafet in Shmuel, talk about the plishim getting ready to fight against Bnei Israel. So they're getting ready. David is involved, right? I didn't bring them because they're not particularly relevant to the story, right? And then pasuk gimel starts with Ushmuel meets. Shmuel dies. Please bedu lo kol Yisrael v'kruhu berama b'yiro v'shaul hisir ha'avotz el ha'yidonim ha'aretz. Two seemingly totally unrelated things. We interrupt the programming of the war with Plishim to tell you, number one, Shmuel was dead, and all of Israel had lamented him and buried him in Ramah, even in his own city. And two, Shaul had put away those that divined by ghosts or familiar spirit out of land. Shaul, as one of his campaigns, removed all of the magic from his kingdom. Now this functions as what I like to call a previously on Tanakh. So you know how, like, you're watching a TV show, and you see it, they give you like the clips of what happened in the episode before, and then all of a sudden they bring in something that happened like a season ago or like seven episodes ago. Does everyone know what I'm talking about if you had this? And you're like, I have a feeling that's gonna be relevant in this episode, right? I wouldn't have just like randomly brought that in unless that had some sort of significance. And that's really what's happening here, right? Because when did Shmuel die? Let's test your knowledge of Nah. Does anyone know when Shmuel was it actually listed as dying? Yeah, three prakim before, right? So this is not news. We actually, as readers of Tanakh, are very well aware that Shmuel has died, right? So that doesn't feel like a necessary thing to tell us. And the second thing, the fact that Shaul removed magic, that's new information, but seems completely off topic for the idea that he's going to war with the Plishtim, right? But in fact, if you read on the story, you clearly understand what those two details are doing, right? So as they gather, as the Plishtim gather, it says in Pasuk Hey, Vayar Shaul et machane Plishtim, Vayira Vayichared libo ma'od. He's scared, and his literally uses the word chared, which means to tremble. His heart is trembling. He's so freaked out about going to war with the Plishtim. He doesn't know what to do. And he says, "Vayishol Shaul b'Hashem, v'lo anehu Hashem, gam b'chalamot, gam b'orim, gam b'nivim." Shaul tries to speak to God. He tries to reach out to Hashem, and God doesn't answer him. He doesn't answer him in dreams. He doesn't answer him with the urim uturim, and he doesn't answer him with nivim. Now, I think in order for us to really understand this, like what's happening here, we have to take a step back. So, let's talk about Shaul's relationship with, not so much with the Chalamot, but with the Urim and the Nevi'im. So let's start with the Urim. Right, who are the ones that commune with God through the Urim? Kohanim. Right, what's the thing that the text is saying about Shaul? Why in fact, did Shaul, was Shaul not able to communicate using the Urim? Yeah. Exactly. A few prekim before, right, he found out that the city of Nov, which is filled with Kohanim, was helping out David in a very minor capacity, and he out of this like complete fit of rage, killed the entire city of Kohanim. So what Kohen is going to be available to him to communicate, right? Why does Shaul not have a connection with the Nevi'im? Well, I think for that, we have to go back to his relationship with Shmuel, right, who obviously is going to be relevant shortly in the story. But Shaul had this like very, very intense relationship with Shmuel, right? Shmuel anointed him. Shaul depended on him. Shaul reached out to him through everything. And they're very, very interconnected. And then, and this is a story that I'm sure many of you have heard, it comes up every year in Purim, Shaul is commanded to kill the entire nation of Amalek, right? He's supposed to kill everyone. And in fact, he does not. He leaves the king. He leaves aside some animals that he thinks he's going to sacrifice. And Shmuel is furious with him. He shows up, but he immediately like tries to get Shaul to admit his mistake, right? This is a famous thing where he says, I hear the sounds of animals speaking. And Shaul doesn't, you know, own up to it. And then finally he calls Shaul out. Shaul says, you're right, I sinned, but it's already too late. And Shmuel attempts to leave. There's this very famous ambiguity where as Shmuel is leaving, someone tears someone's coat. It's not entirely clear who's tearing. If it's Shmuel tearing Shaul's coat, Shaul tearing Shmuel's coat, any permutation, any combination of those two. And he turns around Shmuel at that moment and he says, just like this coat was torn, the kingdom will be torn from you. And that is the last time that Shmuel and Shaul interact. They never see each other again. And Shmuel doesn't die right away, right? He's in the story. He anoints David. He does a few other things. He saves David one time from Shaul. That's the last time they see each other. So as a side note, going back to that ambiguity, I like the ambiguity that it's the idea that Shaul is grabbing Shmuel's coat. It feels like it makes sense, like it's this like desperate attempt, like don't leave me, which is like really heartbreaking almost. And Shmuel turns around and says, that's it, like it's over for you. But because of that, right, and that was sort of a long-winded way of getting us to that point, he doesn't have any communication with the Nevi'im. There are no Nevi'im also that are available to him. That was his last true relationship with the Navi, and that was destroyed. So it's kind of this thing of like, okay, Shaul, you've made your bed, now you have to lie in it. You have cut off all of these forms of communication. You're not going to get to speak to God on this matter. You're just going to have to deal with your fear and go to war with the Plishtim. But that's not what he does. What does it do? What does he do? Vayomer Shaul Abadav. He turns to his servants and he says, Bakshu li eshet ba'alat ov, ve'elcha aleh ve'edrashaba, vayomru avadav elav, hine eshet ba'alat ov ve'endor. So he says, please go and find me this woman who's a ba'alat ov, you know, the going back to that magic where you can speak through your armpits, find me one of those people. And they say, in fact, there is a woman in Endor. Now, this reference would not work on any of my high school students, but I'll see, some of you might know where I'm going. In the show Bewitched, who's Samantha's mother? Andorra, right? That is clear. That's taken from this. That's a reference to Andor, Andorra. They're like suddenly playing off that Tanakh thing. So certainly my 9th and 11th grade students would not understand that reference. I'm glad I could break it out with you, right? So they say, okay, there's this woman. So what does he do? He says he disguises himself. He puts on new clothes. He goes in the guise of night. And he goes to this woman and he says, please bring up this woman for me that I ask. I mean, bring up this man for me that I ask you to bring up. And she says, okay. She's really nervous. And she says, Hinei ata yadatet asher asa Shaul. You know what Shaul did. Asher hichrit et ha'avot et ha'yidonim in ha'aretz. V'lama atam et nafesh benafshi lehamitini. She goes, what, are you an idiot? You know that Shaul, right? And again, she doesn't know that this is Shaul. He's completely disguised. She says, you know Shaul has said that you can't do this. This is me risking the death penalty. And he says, Chai Hashem, Mikircha Avon B'Dvarza. I promise something's going to happen to you. You'll be fine. So she says, okay, Batomer Haisha, Adni Alelach, Bayomer Et Shmuel Ha'alili. She says, who am I bringing up? And he says, please bring up Shmuel for me. She sees Shmuel. She freaks out. She screams. It says she calls out in a loud voice. And she says, why have you deceived me? You are Shaul. At that moment, right, she knows that he's Shaul all of a sudden. She didn't know, and now all of a sudden she knows, right? And he says, don't worry, it's going to be fine. And he says, Vayomer la. Ma Tara, what do you see? Batomer, Ish Zakin Oleb Hu Otameil. I see an old man and he's wearing a coat. Vaida Shaul Kishmuel Hu. And Shaul goes, now I know that that's definitely Shmuel. Oh, you see an old man with a coat? 100% that's Shmuel. And he starts talking to Shmuel. And Shmuel says, Vayomer Shmuel Shaul, Lama hir gastani, la lototi. Why have you disturbed me to bring me up? Why have you done this? And he proceeds to talk about everything that's happened before. And Shaul says, you know, I've been cut off from God. I don't have any means of communicating with him. I don't know what to do. Shmuel says, no, why? Like, he says, because you did not listen to the voice of God and you didn't execute with force wrath upon Amalek, therefore the Lord has this thing onto you this day. Right? He says, because you didn't do what you said, you know why you're cut off. You didn't do what you were supposed to do. And he says, Vayitin Hashem Gam Yisrael Imcha. God will deliver you, B'yad HaPlishtim, U'machar Ata U'banecha Imi. And tomorrow you and your sons will be with me. Now, in terms of reuniting, right, there's a lot of harshness in Shmuel's language, but I think that's something really beautiful that he says to him, and tomorrow, don't worry, you're going to be reunited with me, right? We haven't seen each other, but like I know that when you die, you'll be reconnected with me. So let's stop. Let's pause for a second. I'm going to ask you guys to get involved now. Magic or not, what do you think? What's jumping out to you is like, oh, definitely, that is clearly magic. He has been raised from the dead, and what's maybe, let's start with that. What strikes you? Does this feel like a case study in magic? This is true magic happening. Yes, okay, what's telling you absolutely yes? Mm-hmm. Excellent. And there's even so the two options so far were like, this is totally in his imagination, right? If this is a hallucination or this is real magic. There's even a middle ground, but I want to find evidence in the text for both of those. So we're gonna return to that task. But there's even evidence in the middle to say maybe he's getting nevuah, right? Was that what you're gonna say? Right? He's had nevuah before. Like he might be seeing a vision and presuming that it's part of this process of raising the dead, but in fact it's just him getting nevuah. So what evidence do we see in the text that suggests this is real magic? Yes. Sure. So there seems to be evidence in the text that Shmuel is rising up and speaking to Shaul. Excellent. And Shmuel is talking about things that are actually going to happen in the future, which I think you're right, could be resolved by saying, oh, it's nevuah. Could just be, you know, a lucky guess that the Baalat Ov is taking, or there could be, like, truth to that. What else? Now, I know it's hard because you don't have the psukim in front of you. So, yes. Excellent. And I actually think that proof, which I'm going to, don't worry, I'll recap for those who didn't hear, is probably one of the stronger proofs and also one of the weaker proofs at the same time. Because she says, remember, he says, what do you see? And she says, I see an old man with a coat. Now, Shmuel is known to wear a coat. His mom, it's actually very sweet, his mom would make him a coat every single year, right? And so, like, there's a possibility that this is the coat he would walk around with. That story that I mentioned after Amalek, when someone ripped someone's coat, if Shmuel was indeed the one who was wearing the coat, right, then yes, again, he's described as having a me'il. And in fact, the pasuk says, Ve'idza Shaul, Shaul, this is the thing that Shaul says, oh, of course that's Shmuel, of course it's Shmuel because he's wearing a coat. On the other side, on the flip side, right, if you had said to me, Lahavdil, Rachel, can you do me a favor? Can you go into the shul and just get for me the older man wearing a coat? I would say to you, I'm going to need a little more information than that, right? That is, in fact, that ends up being something that could possibly describe Shmuel, but also it's kind of generic in its own right, you know? So could she just, it's kind of like, this reminds me of, I mean, very parallel to those mediums today who will say, like, so I think that there's someone in this audience who has recently broken up with someone that they care about, and they say, is that true for you? And of course, inevitably, there's someone who puts their hands up and they say, you know, I'm seeing an L. And that person's like, oh, wow, his name was Albert, so there's an L in that, you know, and kind of like providing information. This is maybe how these fake mediums work. They give something relatively generic and they say, go with that. What else? What else might suggest that maybe she is not, in fact, doing magic? Yes. Excellent. The idea that she says, you know that Shaul said this thing, right, maybe might be her subtle hint, like, I see that you're Shaul, you're king, you can't hide that from me. So I'm going to kind of lay out what I'm saying, so this is not a trap, right? You're not trying to fool me here. And then again, right, she seems to say later on, oh, you're Shaul, and only learn that, which might suggest, oh, there's some supernatural power revealing that he's Shaul, but maybe she knew all along. The other thing, right, it says, I don't know if anyone caught this, right, let me find the exact pasuk, it says she calls out in a loud voice. She seems, like, completely shocked that Shmuel comes to life, right? Which maybe suggests she's not, this magic might actually be happening, but she herself is not a magician. This is just like one of those fluke things. It's kind of like, it reminds me of the scene in Ghost when Whoopi Goldberg is this fake, I don't know if anyone's seen that movie, right? Whoopi Goldberg is this completely fake medium, but all of a sudden when Patrick Swayze comes to her, she finally gets to speak to the dead for real, right? So that's maybe this, like she calls out in a loud voice. Anything else that's striking people either way? Now you have no excuse because you have the source sheet in front of you. So this is actually this is source E, the second to last page. It's a pretty long story, so I gave you a lot. I'm going to give people a minute just to collect their last thoughts about this. It's listed as source E. The pages are not listed, but it's on. So the question was: does this story strike you as true magic or fake magic?
What makes her say that this is always just because she saw Shmuel? Is she going in one way or the other?
So, you know, there's a couple of possibilities, right? Why is she all of a sudden, like, saying, oh my god, you are Shaul, right? So there's either the fact that she knew all along that he was Shaul, and she's just choosing to make it seem like, oh, this is part of the guise of, like, there's something supernatural going on, right? I'll pretend as if I've just learned this information. The other possibility, so there's a couple of other possibilities. The possibility that's often listed is that, apparently, in the realm of magic, the dead appear in different ways depending on who the person is that they're seeing. So there's an indication that because Shmuel was rising up for a king, Shmuel was in a gesture where he had bowed to Shaul. The other possibility, I think, is who would be the person that would dare disturb the Navi, the great Navi that is Shmuel, and who's the person that would also want to talk to Shmuel? That would make sense. Like it would only be Shaul, right? That speaks to the relationship. That speaks to who Shaul is, right? Like it would make sense that it were Shmuel. Yes. Right. That is a great question. Yes. Right. What comes in this process? Again, is it because she's kind of been like fooling everyone all along, and this is actually her first time really like having magic, and so she's like, I don't know what to describe what I'm seeing, or is she just creating a picture of what's happening? Right. I think there is that ambiguity here. Yes. That is true too. Right. When it describes. Right. In Bereishit, certainly, when it describes the sons of Elohim, it's in that capacity. It's often taken as great people. Yeah. Any other ideas before we move on? Yes. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. It almost seems to shift the conversation. So the point was that it doesn't seem like she's continuing to give this information. Right. She does identify Shmuel. So there is an indication that maybe Shaul can't see Shmuel. Right. He's working off of her identification. But at the same time, there's a shift in the dialogue where it seems like it's a conversation between Shmuel and Shaul. Right. So. Again, that wouldn't really work unless there were magic going on, unless, of course, we take the middle grounds and say, no, but it's Nebuah. So yes, there's a direct line of communication. Yeah, last idea. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Certainly. I think that that's a really fair point, which is that the text, there's a way to read this by saying it's not real, but if you walk away from story, right, that's the harder approach to take. It seems like the text is really talking about this magical experience, and that there is real magic to this. So I think, again, I don't think the Rambam has to, like, you know, throw in his towel and say, you're right, this is magic. I think there's a way to read this story by saying, like, oh, maybe this is, in fact, actually not real. But the easiest read, and probably the one that you could find the most evidence for, is that this is, in fact, real magic. Right. So let's go on. Let's look at another example. So I started with the one that I thought was a little bit more well-known, and for the second one, I'm going a little more esoteric, a little more obscure, and that is to Yechezkel. So that is source F on your source sheets. So. So in Parak Yud Gimel of Yechezkel, it describes people, and I want to give you the context, but I want us to still keep an open mind. It describes all of the false prophets that are in B'nai Yisrael and that are doing the wrong things. And then it says in Yud Chet, V'amarta, ko'amar Adonai Hashem hoy lid mitap rot kisatot al atzali yado ve'osot ha'mispachot al rosh al komal tzodev nefashot. It says, God, it says, woe to those who sew cushions on all of the all armpits, right? You didn't know that armpits were going to feature so heavily in this year, but they did, right? On all armpits, and who make the veils for the head full of every height to ensnare souls. There are these women who are using these pillows to trap souls. And it goes on to say, right, in the next pasuk, "Tichalelna oti alami b'shali," you profaned me, right? You fooled people. "Lehamit nefashot aler timutena," by killing souls that were not meant to die. "And lechayot nefashot asher lo techayana," and for keeping alive, for bringing back to life souls that were not meant to live. You're manipulating things. You're moving around the souls. And then jump down to Pazachaf. "V'shilachta et nefeshot asher atem esodudot et nefeshot leprochot," I shall free the people whose souls you ensnare to make them fly away. You're doing this thing, I shall free them. And then he goes on to say in Chaf Bet, "Ya'an hake'ot v'leiv sadik shaker v'ani lo hichafti," because you break the heart of the righteous ones with falsehood, whereas I did not pain him. So Lachin Shah, and this is Chaf Gimel, just end off, and I'm just reading a piece of each pasuk. You can fill in the blanks there. "Lachin Shav lo techzena v'kasem lo techzema," therefore you shall neither prophesy vanity nor divine divinations any longer, and I shall save my people from your hands, and you will know that I am the Lord. So, what do you think? Real, not real? Are they in fact trapping souls or not? Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, give me evidence for that. Where do you see that? Excellent. Is there real truth to this? Now, my mom would tell me stories of when she grew up in South Africa, that every now and then she would see a witch doctor. And now she wouldn't go to the witch doctor, but she would see them function, and they would say to someone, "You are going to die." And just through the process of like being told that they were going to die, in fact, that person would die. Right? The mind is a powerful thing, and if someone says to you, "I am capturing your soul," that might actually will someone to die. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're performing real magic. So that's certainly one read of this. Yes. Yes. It specifically uses the word sheker. Right? It is false. It is not real. That seems to be the read. At the same time, does anyone want to argue the other side? I think that the easy, again, just in the way that Shmuel, there was one like very obvious way to read it. I think that the more obvious way is to say that this is entirely false. Yeah. In Yutet, it doesn't say, it says you are killing souls that were not meant to die, and you are keeping alive souls that are not meant to live. It doesn't say you were pretending to do this, or you're fooling people. I mean, it does say that in other places, but, and he also says, in light of that, v'shilachti et ha'nefeshot asher etam esodot et nafsheim, I'm going to save those souls. Save them from what? If this is fake magic, you don't need to save them from anything. Right? So it does, again, it seems a little bit unclear whether or not this magic is real or false. Any last thoughts on Yechezkel? So, I kind of set this up to say, we're going to, you know, I don't know if your expectation was we're going to solve this by the end. We're actually probably not going to solve it, right? Because the truth is there really a practical difference between whether or not there's real magic or not? Before I do that, I want to stop and say, are there parallels that people see in those two stories, these two examples of magic? Are there things that people see that are like shared at all? Are there themes, are there motifs in these two accounts that are parallel to each other or that are similar to each other? Is there any sort of shared similarities between these two stories that I've given you of Shaul and the Baalat Ov and Yechezkel and these women with pillows stealing souls? Yeah. Certainly, right? There's a little bit of manipulation and suggestion going on. Excellent. right? Yes. If for people who are, and we're going to come back to this idea, vulnerable and desperate, right? Anything else that's similar? Where is it? In what area does this magic function? Excellent. This magic happens, and I think it's interesting, right? Magic, there's a lot of examples of magic, but the magic that we see play out in Tanakh the most is interacting with the dead, right? The last thing, and I'm not going to do anything with this similarity, I there were other options for who to talk about when I was talking about magic. I thought I could maybe talk about Bilam. Problem with Bilam is you have to get into the whole discussion of, which again is another shir I could give, the whole discussion of, do brachot have magic, right? Because it seems like he's blessing and that sort of has this power in its own right that no one could stop. I hope I'm giving you a question to think about. I'm not going to give you an answer to that today. But I chose these two just because I also thought it was fascinating that it's women. Being engaged in magic, and I don't have a good answer for why that is, but just knowing everything that we know about history, with the Salem witch trials and the history of women being accused more of magic, I just thought it was interesting that it's two women, two stories about women engaging in magic more. Not suggesting anything, I just thought that was interesting. Yes? Sorry? Yes, it uses feminine language quite a lot in association with magic, so I think that that's, it is interesting. Again, I'm not doing anything with that, but I want to go back to this idea that they both involve death. And really this question of, why is it so bad to practice magic, right? So we started out by saying there's two sides to the prohibition. There's a prohibition of practicing magic, and then there's a prohibition of seeking out magic. So let's start with practicing magic. The people who are doing this, what is so bad about what they're doing? And I don't think it's a coincidence that magic is often associated with speaking to the dead, right? When it says in Vayikra, what you can't do with magic, it says, you shall not seek out those who are Yidonim, those who are able to pull up familiar spirits, and those who are avot, those who are able to talk to spirits, the mediums. And it's not a coincidence, right? Because what is this magic about? This magic is about knowing more information, knowing about what's beyond. And I cannot think of a group of people that are more vulnerable, more desperate to find out this information than people who have just lost a loved one. And so magic isn't problematic just because you're potentially pulling on spirits from the world, whether or not it's real or not, or because you're manipulating people, which is bad. But it's who you are trying to reach. It's these people who are just begging to have information, begging to connect to their loved ones, and you're using that against them. It says in this other source I gave you in G, the prophet has killed the souls of good people, condemning them to eternal punishment in Sheol. The second death from which the inhabitants of the hereafter were not exempt, but they kept alive the souls of evil people to invoke them from the netherworld whenever they wanted to make use of their nefarious powers. Right? Why is it so nefarious what they're doing? And I mean, there's a lot there that we can unpack, but again, it's this idea of, like, these are people who are so desperate. They just want to know more information, and they're using their powers to their supposed powers to manipulate that. I think it's really deliberate in the language that it says, let's so deid nefeshot, that they are capturing souls because there is something predatory about it. They're preying upon these people who are desperate. On the flip side, why is it so bad to seek out magic, right? Why, if you are someone who's desperate for that information, like, why can't you seek it out? And for this, I think we have to turn to the last source, and that is H. Source H, which is from Shmuel. And it is actually, this is the statement that Shmuel, this is a list of statements that Shmuel says to Shaul after Shaul doesn't kill all the Amalek. And I never would have noticed that it brought up magic if not for this year, but I think it's fascinating. What does he say? After Shaul does not kill Amalek, he says, Chichata'at ketzen meri, for rebellion is the sin of witchcraft. And he goes on to say that it's a problem, and this is why you're losing your kingdom. But he makes a connection to witchcraft. What does the Masudat David say? What does this mean that magic is, rebellion is the same as magic? Magic and rebelling against God are the same. In what way? Someone who seeks out someone who does divination is saying, I don't have trust in Hashem anymore. They're going around, and rebellion is the same thing. Both of those people are saying, God has set up a system, and I don't need to go through that system. I can just go around. I can rebel against God in that way. So first, I do think it's fascinating, and again, this is, I said there will be an echo of many other shirim. This is another shir I could give. It's not a coincidence that Shaul hears, oh, magic and rebellion are the same, and instead of like amending his ways, he decides, oh, I'm going to take on this campaign to remove all the magic from my kingdom. And in fact, right, there's the irony, as Shmuel says, you are doing the same thing as magic. In the end, he seeks out Shmuel through magic. Like, there definitely is that through line that the text is trying to create, right? But it's also really speaking to what is the problem with those who seek out magic. What are they doing? And that's really this idea that God has a certain order. He has a certain way that he's set up the universe, certain things that are supposed to happen. And when you're seeking magic, you're saying, I am not going to accept what God has put in place. When someone dies, it's upsetting. And of course, in some ways, we'd love to reconnect with those loved ones, but that is a clear line that God has drawn. He said, this person is no longer in this world. And when you're seeking out the dead, you are just going around that line. You are circumventing what God said. I think the same thing is true for how we kind of use magic in modern parlance today, right? We'll say to someone, oh, you have to try this diet pill. It works like magic. What does that mean, right? If you want to lose weight, what do you have to do? You have to eat sensibly. You have to work out. There's certain things that you have to put in place. And by creating this, by using this magic pill, you're saying, I don't need to do any of that. You have this system, but I'm just going to walk right around that system and take my own route, and that's better. And so magic is problematic because it's a rebellion against God in that way. And, you know, I talk to my students a lot, and with this I'll end. I talk to them, I'll save time for questions, about haritzut, what we call haritzut in SAR, which is diligence, and about being having grit, having resilience, because we live in a world where everything is at our fingertips. Right? Everything feels like magic. I need information, I'll just, you know, go on my iPhone and get the answer. I need to do something, I don't have to like spend hours learning a language, I'll just use like Duolingo and like magic, I'll learn a language, right? All of these tricks and all of these shortcuts. And that is something that's really poisonous, that thinking of you don't have to invest any work anymore. And so while magic seems so far removed from us, that attitude, that's real, and that's something we're dealing with, and that's really something that we have to combat. So to end, I can't tell you whether or not magic is real, but I think the impetus to turn to magic is very real, and that's what we should avoid. Thank you. Questions, comments? Yes. Right, the specificity of all of the different types of magic, I think, like, would lead someone to say it's probably real. If my instinct to say that magic probably did exist, I think that there's room for both approaches, but I certainly lean more towards the Ramban. But at the same time, whether or not it's real, people were practicing these kinds of things. They were trying to summon ghosts. So he's just trying to tell them to avoid those behaviors, whether or not they might actually have some real results at the end. Yes. So Khartoumim were another... The question was, where do Khartoumim fit into this? Certainly they were another option for what I would talk about in terms of who were practicing magic. There is a possibility that the Khartoumim were in fact doing magic, or that they were just very gifted illusionists, and at a certain point, God just, you know, outsmarted their illusions, and they no longer could duplicate those things. But that is an approach to a whole conversation by the Khartoumim also. Right. It's a little bit of a faulty question because there are definitely things that we take to be nisim, which is the relationship between magic and nis are so interconnected. Yes. Yes. Yeah, right. Because I think our assumption is like knowledge is always good, but it seems here, but there are limitations to what our knowledge can be and should be. And I think you're right. And I even in the language of Shaul, like Vayidat, he knows that it is Shmuel, right? It continues with that shoresh of Yadat. So certainly, yeah. All right, I think I will give you guys some space to get coffee to reset for the next year, which you have the source sheets for, so it'll be a different experience. Have a great day.